This episode is brought to you by Vuori. I love sports. I know you do too. I also know that lots of you exercise, but if you're like me and my wife, the beloved sports gal, you're sick and tired of ugly, uncomfortable workout gear, especially, you know, I do a lot of walking. I walk around LA. I make calls. I listen to podcasts. Here are two words that will change everything. Vuori clothing, a line of activewear that is unbelievable. The best thing about Vuori is you can lounge around in it. You can work out in it. You can go outside. You can go shopping down in your local wherever. And you never feel like you're either underdressed or overdressed. You're just comfortable. You can wear it when you're training, traveling, lounging around the house. Go get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet. Here's the deal. Our listeners get 20% off their first purchase at Vuori.com/Simmons. Once again, Vuori.com/Simmons.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes has arrived in IMAX.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, now playing only in theaters. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
It's Bill Simmons. Did you know I've had my podcast for 15 years? Do you know that it is the most downloaded sports podcast of all time? Did you know I have guests from the sports world, from the culture world, people who work for The Ringer, people outside The Ringer, celebrities, experts, you name it. It's on my podcast 3 times a week, late Sunday night, late Tuesday night, late Thursday night, the Bill Simmons podcast. Check it out on Spotify.
I just got a message. Look, I literally just got a message back from Glenn Hoddle. I said, Gaffer, when are we playing golf? And he sent them. 4 umbrellas, a thumbs up, 2 really angry faces in the golfer. So. Hi everyone, welcome to Wright's House. Hope you are all safe and well. Today we're going to talk about the FA Cup, third round, Arsenal, Chelsea, and giving managers time. Plus, we're going to give flowers to Darren Moore, Gareth Bale, and Sebastian Haller. And my guests are Ryan Hun and Musa Kwonga.
Hello.
How are you guys?
You okay? Very good, morning? I'm good. Very well indeed.
What's going on? How are you?
I'm very good. I've got to share some news because under-12s football, man. I went to watch my friend's son play and the pitch weren't great. Both teams, you should have seen the way these little boys, these like 11-year-olds were trying to play. They've done a move from back to front goalkeeper. And you know what's really cool is watching like the goalkeeper and even when they get fouled, watching how they react. You want to see how, when they get fouled, how quickly they jump up. And like the goalkeeper started doing that thing where he catches the ball and then you know when they drop on it?
Yeah. There's nothing funnier than kids mimicking like pro shithousing.
Bro, honestly. Honestly, the tackles that they were flying into and the skill that they were trying, they'd done this move from back to front. It was apt. If it was a goal, I was thinking, oh my God. And what was really beautiful about it is that I'm looking for replay because you should have seen on this terrible pitch what they were trying to do. And the parents. People talk about the parents. I don't know what it's like now, but like the parents were amazing. It's nice. Like no one was saying anything. No one was shouting anything from the sidelines. Even
That's
though
cool.
like my son's team, they were winning 2-0 and it felt very nice. Everything was lovely. And then when they scored, you should have seen how they jumped. These people was like, yes, come on. Right, and then all of a sudden, the parents on this side, because they realized how much they wanted to win. So these parents, so all of a sudden, everybody started to really cheer and say, come on, guys. It was so
amazing.
Good. It was so
good. If I ever have a kid and they play football, the first time they play, I'm going down with like flares and tifos and shit. I'm like, fucking, that's just going to be like, it's going to be like going to Pauk. Do you know what I mean? You know, that's what it's going to be like.
Honestly, you know something as well, but there's so many things that you could tell them. But I said to him, listen, I need to come and watch the boys when you play on a better pitch because you could see what they're trying to do. They're trying to implement it. They were trying to play and pass through. But then when you get, what you realise is that when the pitch is that bad and you have to take an extra couple of touches just to get the ball controlled. So you're actually, the guys are actually hindered by it. So what I'd like to do, I said to them, listen, guys, you should start filming the guys and explaining to them why they need to, in this area, make it go quicker so it could go out here. But even on the other side, even on the other team, they had this big guy playing in the middle. They had a little guy playing on the right wing. And the guy on the right wing, they wanted him to play really wide. And I'm thinking, come on, guys, too much tactics, because the guy wasn't even getting a touch in the fucking rain. It was like this. But you know what? It's the energy and the way they were flying into the tackles, the way they were trying to pass, the things they were trying to do. It just really looked very pure and innocent. Do you know what I mean?
You need to go back to those days now and again, honestly. Yeah,
honestly, like, Moose, you do.
I go watch my godson play in Brussels when I'm there, like every sort of about a couple of times a year. And it's always amazing because it's the pitch is a kind of like sunken area. Right. So it's like a sort of valley and everyone, all the parents are sort of crammed in there. And whenever someone scores, everyone's like very restrained till someone scores.
Yes.
And then you'll see like a couple of slightly zealous parents, maybe including myself, like godparents, like the pitch invasion.
Nice.
not much, but it's like, you know, a couple of yards onto the pitch going,
I think that's all that should happen. Cheering.
Yes, I agree.
No,
I agree.
Shouting from the line, because you know you have to be a certain...
Yeah.
Certain meters away from the pitch, which I think is brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, amazing. So as the boys can get on with it. It was a beautiful thing to do. You know what? I'm revitalized.
This episode is brought to you by Vuori. I love sports. I know you do too. I also know that lots of you exercise, but if you're like me and my wife, the beloved sports gal, you're sick and tired of ugly, uncomfortable workout gear, especially, you know, I do a lot of walking. I walk around LA, I make calls, I listen to podcasts. Here are two words that will change everything. Vuori Clothing, a line of activewear that is unbelievable. The best thing about Vuori is you can lounge around in it, you can work out in it, you can go outside, you can go shopping down your local wherever, and you never feel like you're either underdressed or overdressed. You're just comfortable. You can wear it when you're training, traveling, lounging around the house. Go get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet. Here's the deal. Our listeners get 20% off their first purchase at Vuori.com/Simmons. Once again, Vuori.com/Simmons.
So guys, you see the game last night?
I did.
Oxford Arsenal.
Yes.
You were there.
Yeah.
You've been to a few games this weekend, huh? You were at Man United on Friday as well.
Yeah, Man United Friday, which was really good. Watching Marcus Rashford in this form is a delight to see, because you can see in him, guys, that I'm ready. I'm taking anyone on. Give me the ball anywhere. Shoot. He's gone to the place. He's got to the place.
He's locked
so
in.
So now all
he?
It's going to... Yeah, he's got to the place. You watch him, even the way he's moving... Without the ball, the way it's, honestly, he's a frightening thing to watch at the moment.
Do you know what he's like? He reminds me of, you know, when Raheem Sterling made that statement on Instagram about racism and then just went like media silent.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that, where he basically like, I'm a brilliant footballer. I've got something about society. I've got nothing further to say. I'm now just going to concentrate on football. Not that Rashford doesn't care anymore. He does, of course. But no one can say, even if he never said a single thing again in public, no one could ever question him on that front. And now it's like he's got, he's in his mid-20s and he's just locked in and he can just go after it. And watching him against Everton is so interesting. It was actually quite reminiscent of a younger, like Di Maria, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
You know how Di Maria would just go on and just absolutely dismantle anything
just
in front of
any
him?
Any team, anyone.
So, you know, 2-3 players you throw at him, you send to him and he's got you. It doesn't matter. Actually, there was a point Rashford got the ball in the second half and I was thinking, you sympathize with the defenders, actually, because they're not going to enjoy that.
No. You see what he's done to Seamus Coleman?
Brutal.
What he done, I know that Seamus, great player, he's done brilliant.
Excellent,
and he's getting to that stage where, you know, like I say, with Marcus Rashford, I'd like to see it with Anthony more, but Anthony seems like he wants to beat somebody, he wants to do something and then just pass it off sideways instead of actually taking someone out of the game. And when Marcus started to run at Seamus Coleman, you just felt like, there's only one winner here. He stopped him, he moved him, then he stopped him, and then Seamus was at, and then bam, he crossed it in, and then they scored. And you just think to yourself, that is somebody who is just knows who he's up against, and he's just killing now. He's killing.
It's almost like a rest and a little bit of treatment on a problematic injury that's been bugging him for a while. Wow, look at this. This guy's actually a really fucking good footballer.
Right.
Do you know what I love? Actually, I love what you mentioned about Anthony as well in that context. Ryan, again, like Ryan, so first of all, I completely agree. And just to sort of add to that, Anthony would do quite well to watch those tapes of Luis Figo, actually, because that was a winger who set you up, who beat a man, but always had a strategy. And I think with Anthony, that's the thing. The knee's been overarching strategy. You can beat a man by all means, but I think it's like, what's the point? You know, there were times when, like, early on writing, in my writing career, you'd write the most spectacular paragraph you could, but didn't tie to anything and there was no point to it. And actually, the older you get, you just cut that stuff out because who cares? Like, what's the A to B? And I think with Anthony, he's still figuring out a lot of things. He might be a couple of years in the Anthony he's meant to be, because I think he needs to get that bit out of his system, if that makes sense. Not the flamboyance, but
you want to take that away from him.
But what's the strategy? What's the point?
I think that you know, with Marcus Rashford, with things that's going to happen, I'm praying that it happens for Jadon Sancho when he comes back, when he gets back going again, because at some stage when Anthony gets into the, I'm at Man United and we're on a mission to get back to where we were. And I'm looking at Marcus Rashford, I'm looking at Casemiro, I'm looking at the players, and I'm thinking, okay, it's time to start fucking playing some serious football now. This is about, right, bam. You know, because Man United are ominous.
Yeah, man, five
and
straight
the
wins.
Manager. Honestly.
The manager's really good, isn't he?
Manager's really good. Very good. You know, he's got the vibe where he's so fucking, he's so focused on what he's doing. He's just doing it and slowly changing. You can see it now. You can feel it. You can listen to it. Even when Luke Shaw, when he done his interview about people being late and what the manager expects now, what we expect, their mindset is changing.
Yeah. Mm.
Their mindset's changing. So they're coming. So everybody's got to be ready for that. But anyway, I'm going to talk about last night. And
yeah, you were at Oxford, right? Had a little chat with Mikel.
Yeah, a lovely chat with Mikel.
Some lovely images on Getty. Just you and Mikel.
But it was nice because he was just on good form. So when you're doing the interview and you're talking about him, talking about Sambi Lokonga, talking about Vieira, talking about Emile Smith Rowe, talking about where they're going, talking about how the fans, how he realised, guys, that it's vitally important to get the fans reconnected. That's the first question I asked him, Moose, because I want to not give him credit for it, but him recognising how much of a part that the fans play at home for the team. And he says, this is one of the biggest things I had to change when I get there, right? You know, and I was thinking, I'm so pleased that he's able to say that and see that. He said a lot of work's gone into that. You can see with Oxford, they want to play. They're trying to play. Their closing down was very good. I thought in the first half, I thought Vieira, Sambi Lokonga, maybe talk about Sambi a little bit in a minute, and Eddie Nketiah. I thought that the spin and to run into space was on literally all the time, because obviously Carl Robinson had said, listen, I don't want them to get no time on the ball. Anybody's going towards it, I want you right in their back. I want you to make sure that you make that touch uncomfortable, that first one, push them back into their own half, let them come back towards us. I'm thinking, this is prime for, okay, I'm going to go short and go long. Just come in and spin. It was like you're trying to find space for people like Vieira to operate. You know, you're trying to find space for someone like Sambi Lokonga to have time on the ball to be able to look up. And they weren't getting it because they weren't stretching the pitch. Only reason why Oxford couldn't really capitalize, because they kind of, everything petered out for them in the last third. And I was thinking, this is like a boxing match where one fighter literally hasn't got a knockout punch and the guy's just walking through them. And that's what Arsenal did last night. And it took an hour. It was like 33 minutes before Eddie done his first spin. And I think I showed it last night. And it's literally, you could see the defender was petrified. It's the kind of game that I thought, oh my God, if I'm playing in this game, I would be spinning every single time. Because that's what gives you the time to get the ball into feet, Moose.
But I think,
you know, because
I think
the defender, you've got to give the defenders, is he going in short? Is he going long? None of that in the first 33 minutes.
But then I'm giving Arsenal some credit as well, because the thing about Oxford and the moves breaking down in the final third, Arsenal have seen every type of attack come at them. This is the thing. This is the one, and this is not a criticism of Oxford at all. It's more that, like, you play in the Premier League, you play international football, you've seen attacks come at you, like that are trying multiple different forms of attack, multiple types of decoy runners, pressing in weird positions, strikers who are not expecting possession, like passes that are being switches, missing out players, like all those things. So when someone comes to you like Oxford, you're like, oh, you're only using two or three different types of deception. You're not using like, you're not using like 15. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I always joke about the time when Barcelona plays my favorite attack, Barcelona playing against Juventus, Champions League final 2015, the first half, and Messi just stands on the right flank. And everyone's been talking about Messi in the whole lead up to the final, and Messi just stands basically the halfway line the entire first half and no one else to do with him. And Arturo Vidal gets a yellow card because out of frustration, just kicks it. And I think that's the thing, Oxford, and this is no disrespect to them, you're talking about the technical level, the tactical level as well. People that often watch the FA Cup are surprised by how brilliant, and I think you were saying this a couple of days ago, Ian, they're surprised by how brilliant lower league teams, non-league teams look against Premier League opposition, higher opposition. But this is the thing, isn't it? It's maintaining that level of tactical and technical intensity every single match, every single training session. Like, this is the thing, an Oxford United player could be spellbinding, spectacular. Like, let's say even like three weeks out of four. But to do that every single week for 15 years, that's the difference. Yeah. And mentally doing that is exhausting. Do you know what I mean? That makes sense.
But that's the thing.
We were talking about this, weren't we? About the gap, the gap in, and you actually saw it. Like Oxford, for example, Oxford United had Josh Murphy, who's Jacob Murphy's twin, playing for them. And it's like, you know, it's like, you wonder how, I bet growing up, they were probably super similar, you know, and how, we've seen it a few times how, and this is what I love about the FA Cup, that actually there was a guy for Oxford, I forgot his name, sorry. And, but he, all of a sudden he did like one step over, went past Xhaka, did another step over, went past someone. I was just like, this guy, it's like,
I think it might be the right back. Was it Anderson or something?
Oh yeah, maybe it was. It, maybe it was the guy.
He just went through the he went through the middle. He came from Lazio.
That guy. Yes.
And I'm thinking, and the thing is, because he was stride for stride with Gabriel Martinelli, stride for stride.
It makes you realise that the closer to the very, very, very pinnacle of football you get, the margins become smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. Which always, we talk about this all the time, which makes us. It makes you realise, when you step back from it, makes you realise just how good, say, for example, the best five players in the world are actually at any one time. Because we've all seen it. Like, for example, I imagine when you were coming through, Ian, at Sunday League, you were just way better than everyone else. I'm not hyping you up. It's a fact. When when we did that interview with you the first time we met, and you were like, yeah, some games I just only scored my left foot, or I'd only finish off the post, because I was kind of like, the levels weren't really there. Like, we've all played with people who have had, I don't know, like, you know, come through academies or maybe played semi-pro or even played professional briefly. And they're so much better than anyone else, even at a pretty good amateur standard. And
then
when you work your way up and you see it, that actually for an hour, Oxford kind of hung with Arsenal.
Oh gosh,
and they were fine. Do you know what I mean? But then, and you've got guys like just raw ability, actual pure raw ability. It's like, this is amazing. To use a cooking analogy, good, like my good friend here, Musa Kwonga, likes to do occasional Sadio. You know, it's like you have the coolest ingredients, the best ingredients you can buy, but you just can't, you don't know how much of each you need to put in to make the actual dish.
Yes.
And the dish is what makes you elite, I think.
It is. It is. But I think there's something else. And all of this is correct. And I think there's something else to add about the mental side. I think that's underrated, Ian, because you talk about work ethic, right? I don't even know if it's work ethic, because you look how hard, you look at the pressing stats of some of these clubs, people are working, and you look at the, even also look at the championship, for example, 46 games, there's no shortage of effort there. I think the psychological side, Ian, the ability to respond to adversity and challenges, that bit, to not be broken by a near miss. You look at Eddie Nketiah, for example, that man was on the fringes and now he's starting for Arsenal. That man could easily, that he could have easily lost his way, lost confidence. And, you know, you see, there was a brilliant player. I went to watch Luton against Grimsby. Brilliant player on loan. I think called Tom Craddock, was on loan from Middlesbrough maybe. And I thought, my God, that, what a player. And then, but you're on loan to Luton. You're at the bottom of the league. You're away from Middlesbrough. And no matter how hard you work, and he was working hard in that game, psychologically, just to be thinking, I was at Middlesbrough. Or like Jeremy Aliadier, you know, brilliant player. Brilliant player. No question of the talent, no question of the work ethic. And then you go there and you're in the first team squad and Henry is there and you go somewhere else, you get an injury, and it's very, very hard not to look back to, I was on the path to glory.
Mm.
And you see this, listen, this thing I will say, one thing to throw in, the number of heartbroken footballers, one day we'll do a podcast.
Yes.
And we'll just ask footballers to come in or talk about, I'm still heartbroken over this 15 years ago. We missed the chance. We lost the game here. We lost the game there. And I never got my confidence back. And I never believed. And that was the night I never thought I'd be a Premier League player. And I played. Does that make sense?
You know what? You can flip that the other way around, though. And I know that it's not an outfield position, so it's a little bit different. But you look at Emi Martinez.
Yes.
Like,
Jesus.
Journeyman, kind of seen as like a journeyman goalkeeper on loan all the time. Never, you know,
he made his debut at Oxford. He made his debut at Oxford.
Wow. That's wild. Wow. And then all of a sudden, he's fucking won a Copa America, and he's been integral in winning a Copa America and a World Cup in like in back to back.
But if you interview anyone, if you interview anyone that knew Emi Martinez, I bet they'll tell you from the early days, oh my God, that guy's self-belief.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's the thing, you talk to those people. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because there's like a tipping point, isn't there, when with ability, because like you have to have that self-belief.
Mm.
But if you're like if I was moving like Emi Martinez, everyone would be like, all right, bro.
Yeah.
As they were with him, Ryan, as they were with him. This is the point. Remember, people, here's the point, right? Until you succeed, everyone thinks that you overrate yourself.
Absolutely.
Everyone laughs. You see it with beatboxers. Someone said it so well. Beatboxers are terrible for the first 5 years they do it. And they're spitting everywhere and mumbling and stumbling. And all of a sudden, after 5 years, everything kicks in and they're spectacular. And then they're filling arenas.
You know, I was watching him last night, because I wanted to watch Lewis Bate. I heard a lot about him. Chelsea, he went from Chelsea, went to Leeds. Now he's on loan at Oxford.
Mm.
And, you know, I read an interview of what he'd done the other day. And you can just read between the lines, that man is desperate to play at the highest level. Mm. You know, he was in that Chelsea, that Chelsea academy with Livramento, with Broya, with all these, Musiala, Jamal Musiala, he's very close to him. And you think to yourself, you say it, Musa, about the mental side of it. And yes, I totally understand, because you've got to understand the heights he's kind of been and where he's been and the football he's played and the caliber of player he's played with and the quality up front he's had, you know, where I was watching him last night and you could see he's definitely got great technical ability and there's nowhere for it to go.
Mm.
And that, you know, I look at that sort of stuff from a mental aspect and I just feel very fortunate that I never came up against that kind of hardship in respect of trying to get through, because I don't know how I would deal with that, guys, simply because
this is it.
It's tough.
This is an interesting thing about you, Reg. Even though you came through late at a professional level, and we've talked about that progress quite a lot on the show, but the thing that we were talking about with even though the technical gap, like raw ability, might not be that wide between top level players and like players in League One, the only thing that I'd say that you were fortunate about is actually that your experience at the top level increased as Palace's level increased. Do you know what I mean? So you got your level in the second tier, you were killing it there, and then Palace went up, and then you're playing better opposition, but your team is getting better as well. You know, you finish high in the league, you do the FA Cup stuff, so you're progressing at a similar rate to Palace. And I think for you, that was a real benefit, because what would have been horrible for you, for example, if you'd gone straight to a top tier team at the beginning and then been loaned out somewhere. And you might not have actually just, because you basically were essentially, I'm not kind of blowing smoke up your ass, but it was like you gradually upped your level as those new problems were put in front of you. And I think that that's the thing that is, a lot of those players, for example, we kind of saw it with, I use Carl Jenkins as an example. He was a signing when Arsenal made him. They were like, why are Arsenal signing this guy?
Mm-hmm.
And actually he turned out to be a pretty steady top tier fullback.
Yeah.
But he was pulled from Charlton?
Yes.
Who were bottom of the championship, I think, at the time. And everyone was just like, what are Arsenal doing? It shows you that actually, if you put these players in an environment where all of the standards are raised and they're facing better opposition on a weekly basis, but they're also surrounded by better quality teammates, their level can go up.
Sean Davis at Fulham. Sean Davis came up four divisions. And also, who's at Swansea as well? Swansea had a couple of players that did that, didn't they? Came up four divisions. Yeah.
Well,
unbelievable.
Like as well. Some people
Joe Allen, I think. Joe Allen and
yes.
Yeah. But
it's got to be a mental
it's mental
and confidence, because you can you It's because, like, even when I went with England, I knew I was good enough to be there. Steve McMahon slaughtered me for not being able to keep the ball because I was fucking petrified in that moment. Brian Robson pulled me and said, listen, you're here because you're a good player. You keep going. I remember playing with Brian Robson in an England B game. Remember, this is Brian Robson, England B game in Algeria, and he's in the midfield. And, you know what I mean? Honestly, it was an unbelievable experience. He spoke to me literally through the whole game. And I remember with that, and after the FA Cup when we lost, I remember I was on the ground in the Crystal Palace, the second one. And, like, you know, I was on the ground and I was beside myself. I was distraught. Mm. And then someone tapped me on the back and I looked up. It was Brian Robson again. And he was saying, you don't worry. You keep doing what you're doing. You'll be back here. Your time will come. And I remember when he said that to me with Steve McMahon, about don't worry about him. You just keep doing what you're doing. Keep playing. Don't worry about it. I swear to God, those words in that moment from him at that time took me somewhere else. I went, it washed me of all the negativity. I was washed because he was the one that made me feel like, yeah, you're fine. Don't worry about it. Because you'll get players and you'll get a time where you feel weak.
You said something really interesting there that I want to sort of jump on to. Mentoring. Like, because football is such a sort of ruthless world, very few people, and this is why you have people whose kids become footballers and you have these networks of people who are former footballers helping, because former footballers understand just how important it is at vital points to have that conversation to elevate someone, right? Because a lot of those young footballers, no matter how good they are, they're in the wilderness at a certain point in their careers and they're not sure where it's going to go because they're going to trials and they're seeing 50 people just as skillful or more skillful with better stepovers, with better vision, who are quicker, more physical, all the rest of it. And having someone older than you that just gives you that, like, even as a writer, on a very basic level, not comparing myself to any of these footballers, I will simply say that, like, there was one lunch I had in my career as a writer where one elite writer basically said I was good enough, and that changed my life. Like, one conversation over lunch, and this was like, I was in New York with a friend, and then went to lunch with this guy, and he basically said, yeah, you're good enough. And until then, I was like, I'm never going to make anything of myself as a writer.
That was my Chris Waddle chat.
Right,
that's told you about my Chris Waddle.
There's
one conversation.
I had the same thing. I had a coffee with this guy, and I was telling him about a theory I had about Mesut Ozil and Alexis Sanchez, and he said, you should write that. I was like, okay. And now, if I'd known I was going to get stuck doing a fucking podcast with him, I wouldn't have bothered.
Here's the thing. You joke. Every footballer can point to a conversation like that. I'd be fascinated to talk to someone and be like, what was your conversation?
Yeah.
Who was the person that gave you permission to be as great as you've now become?
Someone has to give you somewhere.
Yeah.
The mentality thing is really interesting because when you're brought up in an elite structure, If I was 12 years old and I was wearing, you know, I was on the train going to Arsenal training, do you know what I mean?
Right.
In an Arsenal tracksuit. It's not a flex, but it's like, it is, I'm at Arsenal.
Yes.
If you're coming through at the elite and in elite like academy, you're given all the tools to be elite, you know? And I think it's just a different mindset. So if you're 22 years old and you're coming through at Arsenal, like Gabriel Martinelli, for example, would be, actually Gabby's a poor example because I think he would play exactly the same way if he was at a lower tier as he was at Arsenal.
He kind of did, didn't he?
He got scouted for being that. But do you know what I mean? Like, we've seen all of these academy graduates come through and how different their trajectories might be, even with the same ability, if they come through somewhere else. Because it's just, but every single thing matters, you know?
You know, the thing is as well, now you say that, I've just been thinking, like, two people just popped into my head, and that's Marcus Rashford and Phil Foden. And we're talking about elite players from a young age in academies where everybody's expecting them to come through and be exactly what they're doing now.
Everyone's waiting for you.
Everyone's waiting for you. And this is why when Rashford goes through his spell and everything, like, you're thinking, we're talking about somebody who, him and Phil Foden, have been professional footballers from the age of 8, proper professional footballers, dealing with the pressure of being at those clubs with everybody saying, that's the next guy, that's the next taxi off the rank, he's going to do it. So you have to get into the headspace of those guys with them coming through, with everything that they have to do through teenage, adolescence and everything, with the pressure of the world, because we're talking about clubs that are world-renowned clubs. And they do it. You have to, people don't respect that.
No, that's right. That's
almost like people like kids like that who have come through, who you start hearing about from like the ages of 13. They're
ruining
almost like,
that.
It sounds like, but they almost get like a part-time childhood because they're already professional footballers in their way. It's kind of wild when you think about it.
It's mythical. Yeah. Well, the Messi, the book about Iniesta when the guy's writing the book about Iniesta and he manages to get an interview time with Messi, and Messi was like, Messi's famously very busy, not around for anything. Mm-hmm. And then when Messi hears the book is about Iniesta, he's like, how long do you need? Mm. And when Messi goes, what was it like playing with Iniesta? Like when he turned up, and Messi goes, when I turned up at Barcelona, I knew who Iniesta was. Everyone knew who he was.
Wow.
That gave me chills even saying that. Because
that's so great, eh?
Messi
that's
is
so
like-
cool. I've always wanted to walk into a room where everyone knew who I was.
The one, was it Guardiola going, yeah, Iniesta is the one person we did not have to coach. He was a master of time and space.
The one player we didn't have to coach. That's like a
He's
triple
in his
winning
final
squad.
Form. He was one in his final form at eight.
One of the greatest club sides of all time, and you're being told that you were the only one that didn't need coach.
It's funny because
I think that is what makes the FA Cup third round in particular so special. Yes. There's almost too much of it to go through game by game.
Yes.
But let's use that little topic that we were talking about in terms of like how small the gap is to give some props. We're going to give some flowers out later, by the way. Yes. But Sheffield Wednesday beating Newcastle 2-1.
Oh, God.
And thoroughly deserved it.
Yes. Because as the team is going in form, Newcastle going to Sheffield Wednesday, a massive club. Because when the fans come out at Sheffield Wednesday, it goes back to the old days. Remember they used to play semi-finals there. It's an unbelievable stadium.
Yeah.
And what you see and what I love about the FA Cup and this stage of the FA Cup is if you go there, and it's the best test. It's one of the best times I felt like, okay, I'm going into a situation where I am better than you. We are better than you, but we're going to have to go and prove that we are better than you. Mm. And if you fall off of that in any way, like Oxford showed for an hour, you're going to get fucking punished. That is what I liked with Stevenage and fucking Villa.
Stevenage. Stevenage hanging tough.
Like, Jesus Christ. What it is that, so we're talking Stevenage and Villa are going in better. And I'm telling you now, those Villa players were fucking petrified. That's the only way you lose those games against clubs of that stature is because in your head you are afraid because you don't do what comes naturally to you, what you can show that you are of a different standard. They've come and they've raised their standards, and your standards have not raised. They've dropped because whether it's disrespect, whether it's afraid to lose, whatever it is. And that again,
well, kind
is
of being
the mental
off
side
balance.
Of what the FA Cup does.
Yeah. The intensity, the intensity Stevenage came with.
Yeah, because when you pull a draw against a side in a lower league, it's almost like win, lose or lose. It's not just win or lose or draw. No. Do you know what I mean? It's like you look at Blackpool, for example. Blackpool in the relegation zone in the championship and they absolutely hammered Forest.
Yeah.
They've been waiting on that.
Right, this is what I can't understand about Blackpool. How can you do that? How can you do that in your bottom of the league?
Well, they said it to Gabriel Clark. Said it to Carl after the game on after the Oxford game. Who's just like, does this actually make you look at your league position and make you think you should be doing better in the league? And he was just like, well, yeah, I mean, yeah, kind of. Well, it was a good league.
Should it?
Can I be honest with you as well? There's something else going on, and this is maybe in defense of those lower league players in the lower league teams. When you play an FA Cup tie in front of millions of people, and the global spotlight or the national spotlight's on you. It reminds you the most of the game you imagined growing up as a child.
Okay.
When you're playing in your back garden at the age of seven, Ian and Ryan, you are imagining stadium lights. You're imagining perfect turf. You're imagining your family in the nice seats. You're imagining all of that, right? And for a lot of people, become professional footballers. Actually, their daily reality or their weekly reality does not match the glamour of the game they imagined. So actually, it is a grind, and it's not thrilling. It's not exciting. It's not inspiring. You're on these terrible environments, you're worried about the next contract, you might be 28 years old, you've got a couple of kids and you've got to pay the mortgage and the glamour's not there. And when you're in the FA Cup, it takes you to that place where you're 7 years old again and you're playing with freedom. So the trick is almost the mental headspace when you're playing for like a team lower down the leagues or non-league, it's actually that you have to be delusional. to maintain a world-class level. So you want to get picked to play for a top team, like a Jamie Vardy, for example. Jamie Vardy's genius, you probably find, is that Jamie Vardy imagined himself knee sliding at Wembley every single time he scored in a fourth division game. And that's why he made it. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
The mental, it's not just the mental strength, it's the mental, it's an active imagination, actually.
Yeah. It's like a kind of weird, you have to almost like put up a barrier, and it's self-protect, like self-preservation.
And that's why I'm just defending those players in the lower leagues. Not that you were having a go at them, but just in terms of, okay, like, and this is not comparing myself to these elite footballers at all, because, so let me take a breath before I make my comparison. Before I ever got published, and I never got anywhere as a writer, the one thing that kept me going was walking to the biggest bookstore in the city and imagining my book on a shelf. It's the only thing that kept me going, right? And if I didn't have that vision to imagine that one day I'd be in a bookshelf, and there was no reason to believe I would have been at a certain point, I wouldn't have done it. I wouldn't have got to that bookshelf. And I think for a lot of footballers, it's not that they don't care, it's that they've stopped believing, actually.
Wow. You know, can I say something? Because you talk about dreaming of stuff when you're younger. I know this is, I'm going way off.
No, please, yeah, please.
Like, you see, like, dreaming of, because you don't dream of anything other than success when you're younger.
Yes.
Oh, Wembley, in a World Cup final, scoring, getting the chance. And I couldn't help thinking of Muani, right, at his age.
Yes.
Right? So when you dream of a World Cup final, and I want to go through on goal, and then bam, he actually, I can't stop thinking about him, because that he had his moment.
Yes.
Came, and he the goalie saved it, but I still feel that he should have done better with the chance. But like, the point I'm trying to make is,
yes,
when you dream of stuff, when you never dream of being in that situation, and what if I miss that?
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
You know something? Because like now, I can't stop thinking about Muani. How does he feel that in the biggest game, or the biggest moment in his whole life, everything you've dreamt of, everything you want to happen, it happened for him in that chance and he missed it. Where's he go from here?
Yes.
From a mental aspect.
I think Muani's going to go back there. Look, Deschamps has been appointed again. I think that actually France, they're the favourites for the next World Cup. They are. So, like, yeah, just in terms of team, what's in their squad and what's in that team. What Mwani's got to do is he has to maintain momentum. He has to maintain momentum, whether it's a big move, whether it's like in the summer or whatever.
Yeah.
But he's got to be like, that's my level.
Otherwise he's defined by
my level. My level is not, and he needs to say, my level is not missing a big chance in the World Cup final. My level is playing so well that I got to play at a crucial point of a World Cup final. My level is that I'm good enough to be one-on-one with an elite goalkeeper in a World Cup final with everyone in the world watching me. That's my level.
Okay, I just pray that
that needs to be. Sorry, to take his headspace.
Sorry, to take it away. But
look at Bukayo Saka. After that penalty miss in the Euros, everyone was like, oh my God. Everyone was so petrified for what was going to happen for Bukayo. And since then, he's been lights out.
Skipping through golden fields. He's loving it.
It's like, penalty? What penalty? What Euros?
Exactly. What Euros? Exactly. Love it.
So we've got some replays in the cup coming up before the next round. I'll just quickly round up the ones. Accrington, Stanley, Bournemouth, Forest Green Rovers, Birmingham City, Leeds United against Cardiff City, Swansea City against Bristol City, Wigan Athletic, Luton Town, Wolves against Liverpool, which was a fun.
There's a lot of Premier League teams out, isn't there?
Yes, tasty.
There's a lot of them out, man.
Chesterfield. Before we move on from the FA Cup, shall we talk about Man City against Chelsea?
Oof.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that was a dismantling in the end.
It was.
It really was, wasn't it? It was almost like, you know, and the thing is like, with obviously being an Arsenal guy in Chelsea, London, and like my Chelsea fan, I don't like to see that they're fucking not in a good place with what's going on. I don't think that even when you see Graham Potter, like having a dig at people back in these interviews, he's got to maintain calm. Because if he doesn't maintain calm, then the people above him, for me, they're going to start seeing, is he unraveling? He's just got to keep doing what he's doing. And you mentioned Ryan, Mikel, earlier on, and there was a time, there was a moment where if they sacked Mikel, people say, yeah, that's right, because he hasn't got the history, he hasn't got the experience. Yeah, it was a good time to sack him. They stuck with him. They must stick with him, because I believe if Roman Abramovich was in charge with Chelsea right now, I don't think Graham Potter's still in the job. They've got to make sure that they stick with this guy, because there's a lot of work to be done there. A lot of work. You know what I mean? And so seeing him kind of like snap back or tell people about the stupid questions in the interviews, he's got to get that under control. He's not a Brighton.
I kind of liked that though.
Yeah, but the thing about it is, right, what it shows is, and what they will do now is, all the interviews is a case of, well, he might be ready to snap again.
I think with Graham Potter, I see what you're saying.
Because you know what he's like. He says his stuff. Like with Brighton, when he said these fans seem to have forgotten where they were a few years ago. He's not afraid to say these things.
I like that because
he's telling the truth, but right, he's at Chelsea and it's another way to just keep tapping it, tap.
Yeah,
tap,
but I think that comment in the press conference was actually a little bit more of a, because I've noticed it a little bit, that there's a little bit of some of the coverage of him has been quite patronising. Been like, oh, look at nice Graham Potter. Isn't he so nice? Yeah. And he was at Brighton and now he's at Chelsea. Yeah. And we hope he gets a chance because, you know, he's called Graham Potter and isn't that such a nice name? And like, and all this kind of shit. And he's like, this dude's a serious football mind. Mm-hmm. Just because he's not being a dick in interviews doesn't mean he doesn't have any like bite, you know? Mm-hmm. And I kind of liked that little just bit like, listen, I'm being polite, but check yourselves because these questions are stupid.
Right.
Then, right, they got exactly what they wanted then.
No, I think if he'd gone full Mourinho and been like, giving it the like three, that would have been like, right, we've got him. But the fact that he was so calm about it and he was just like, listen, I'm answering your stupid questions. But like, I think I quite liked that personally. And I think Pep coming out, I don't think it hinders him though. I don't think it does him any harm. And then Pep coming out afterwards and being like, this guy's serious.
I'm pretty sure he can look back at Arteta's early time at Arsenal and find press conference moments where the press got where they wanted. The problem that Chelsea have now and that Arsenal no longer have is that Chelsea right now are in their banter era. They are. Just as Manchester United were. And when you're in that era, doesn't matter how well you're being coached, doesn't matter what incremental advances you're making every week, what players you're improving, the overall image is that when people hear the name of your club, as they did with United for a few years, as they did with Arsenal for a few years, was people would laugh and make some joke and write it off, and no matter how well the coach is doing, right? So what Potter has to do is actually tune out all of that stuff and focus on the week-to-week detail of improving players. Work out Kai Havertz's movement. What do you want to be, Kai? Do you want to be an 8? Do you want to be a 9? Do you want to be a 10? If you want to be a 9, move aggressively. If you want to be a 10, hold back. If you want to be an 8, drop deeper. We need to work out what you are exactly and then go with that. Aubameyang, is he going to work out? Not sure. Ziyech, what's happening there? Like, and just focus on the individual interactions of players and just tune out the other stuff, because when you're in that banter era as Chelsea are, you really have no control over the coverage you're going to get. You're going to get foolishness. So every now and again, what Potter did actually is really good in terms of what Arteta did too. Snap back at it, punch back. So then, because when you do that, when you're pushing back, you're not doing it for the sake of the journalists. You're doing it for the dressing room. So they know that you'll stick up for them, and you're doing it for the supporters who think, oh, you're a soft touch. They're not actually, the tabloids are not your primary audience, because one thing we've learned about the tabloids is they will always get their pound of flesh. They will always get their headline. They'll get it off nothing, right? So I think Potter actually, he's in a better place than he seems to be, like personally. Chelsea are in a far worse position than they seem to be, because they have a horrible amount of ill-fitting pieces and they just have to give him time. And if they don't, if Chelsea don't give him time, it's their loss.
Yeah, and also the thing is, what Chelsea should do is, if they have, if this ownership is serious, then they will look at the guy that they hired and they will look at the structure that they've put him into, and they'll be like, we need to up the structure behind the scenes. Yes. We need to massively invest and update and modernize on a load of areas that we've actually kind of abandoned since we've taken over and give him the tools. Because otherwise they're going to get stuck in this nonstop fucking managerial cycle of hiring and firing for years and years and years. And it's just going to be, it's going to be a mess, because we've seen now that like this isn't 2004. You can't just throw a load of money at a Premier League club and walk it.
Remember where he's coming from
deep.
As well.
The coaching goes remember deeper. Where,
yes. Yeah. You look at De Zerbi, the structure that De Zerbi has now off Brighton, where Potter came from, and the structure, the way this club's run, De Zerbi is coming in and he's able to do what he does, and that is coach. And you can see what's happening with his team. Potter was the same. The structure around him is brilliant. Everything's in place. And then, you know, you go out there and you just can concentrate on your team. He's gone into arguably one of the most chaotic places you could go to in the world right now of football, with Chelsea and what's going on upstairs.
And what the last 18 months they've had has been
honestly,
what, a year
it's just
or so.
Like you've wild. Got. You, and again, if they do get rid of him, it's one of those situations, guys, where it doesn't really matter because I think if you get sacked from Chelsea, I don't think it harms you as a manager,
right? Because people just go, that's the culture. That's the
culture of Chelsea. It would be brilliant if Chelsea could. I see that Tom Bowley's stepped away from doing stuff now. It's like, maybe he's had enough. I'm tired of doing this.
Do you know what it was? I think he heard that he was nominated for the Stadio Prop Joe Award and was just like, this has gone too far.
Finally,
he
stepped away from it because Chelsea is a serious football club. It's a fucking institution. You can't have somebody just willy-nilly just bam, 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 just like with the money and just buying people and just like throwing them into a guy that's coming into a club of that stature. Come on,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, I think someone had a word. I think someone politely in the director's box. I think it was on, you know those ones where you've got that one mate that can like, when you're being a bit, you know, when you know you're being a bit chaotic and yes. you kind of need someone to tell you, but no, everyone's a bit too afraid to say it. You've always got that one friend who's like, hey man, like, whew, yeah, man. You're doing a lot, my man.
You know, it's just like, it's one of those like, listen, bro, like, listen, you know I love you, right? But this isn't you. Why are you doing this?
You know, that's the kind of thing what Nancy would say to me. If I've had a couple and we're out and like I'm starting to just, you know, when your voice kind of goes up a little bit and you're kind of like, Nancy knows when, you know, she'll just say,
because you know,
you get what's on the other people. Way. You know, yeah, like that, yeah. You know, that Grand Theft Auto meme. Oh shit, here we go again. That's what I feel like.
That's the one. It says I get vexed for about 5 minutes because I feel like a child again. But you're right, Moose. You just, that somebody just said to him, listen.
Someone's had a word. Like, someone's been like, hey, Todd, yeah. Man, hey, look, you're doing a lot.
I think it's interesting with Chelsea because it obviously looks like João Félix is coming in on loan for the rest of the season.
I'm so intrigued by that.
Yeah, me too. I mean,
watching him play in that game with Portugal, who did they beat?
The Switzerland, the 6-1.
Yeah, it was Switzerland when our man scored the hat-trick. But like, in that game, you saw everything what you think, my God, yeah, here it is. I just don't see it enough. I'd love him to come here and really set it alight. Because how old is he now, Moose?
He's 23, he's got, I think.
He's still so young. If he could come and just like reignite Chelsea with everything that's going on there, you know, he's so excited.
Because of all the injuries they have as well, he goes straight in and he plays at Chelsea. Mm. Not like, I don't think he does.
I think it's a very exciting signing. Yeah. Very exciting.
Can I say this as well? Nketiah's second goal showed me all I needed to see. When I saw that, I thought, oh, he's ready. He's ready. I was like, oh, okay. Okay. Now we're talking.
do you know what I imagine when he ran away from that? Like, what? Eddie just being like, what?
Mm. That was no, he like, was the way he what? Celebrated. You saw
what?
It. You're
yeah,
like,
yeah, it was just like what?
Oh,
yeah, what?
That's did, because what? Moose. Like I had guys, him, no, yeah. no. He's in the place now.
He's locked in.
We know what Eddie does. If he gets half a yard there, it's like Fabio Vieira's pass was beautiful.
So
but
good.
Once Eddie ran through on there, you're thinking goal. You're thinking goal. When he went through for the second one, you're thinking goal. Whatever people want to say about the goalie, how small he made him, so it doesn't make no difference. Eddie's mindset now is. If you're watching him from the outside and say, oh, Gabriel Jesus has come back, Eddie's not playing. You will take Eddie now and you'll play towards him. You make him play within the width of the 18-yard box, making runs on people's shoulders to get into the situation where he gets one-on-one because he's in the place as a striker where he doesn't believe he's missing. No. He doesn't believe he's missing. Look at the way, man. The subtle way in which he finished that. It's almost like he missed it.
Your defense is in trouble.
It was honestly, it was really good to watch. It's
I
really,
saw that
really
and I was like,
watch.
Yes, because I thought,
yeah, he's ready.
You know, when you watch certain players go through and goal and you look at the shoulders, you look at the shoulders and the poise, you're like, that's in. Just the confidence in the body language there from him. It's like, I belong.
I'm glad, man. And even if Gabriel Jesus comes back, like Eddie Nketiah is going to need to play certain games for Arsenal. He's going to get Arsenal out of trouble in a lot of games.
He's saying exactly what needs to be said for players who are waiting for their opportunity, waiting for their chance. And like he done an interview not long ago saying, listen, I don't mind if I get a run and then I don't do it. But if I get a run and man's doing it, he's got his run and he's doing it. And you know what? I'm looking at him, Emile Smith-Rowe and Saka, they've bulked.
They are.
You want
they
to look... see these, man, bro?
But at training, we saw it. Remember at training, we were like that. The preseason, we were like, "Hey, these lot are, These lot of
I was not, sorry.
It was Ryan.
I'm still sad about that.
Ryan, it wasn't even that much. No, it was Ryan.
It was two days before.
Ryan, it was raining. It was raining the entire weekend.
It was a shit time.
Yeah, whatever, whatever, whatever. Should we go to a break?
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on Hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com.
Should we do flowers?
Yeah, let's do flowers. Three bunches of flowers. First one, I'm going to have to go Darren Moore, Sheffield Wednesday. You know what I mean? That guy, you know, what he's done to get himself to where he is, how he's been treated in the past, how he gets on with it. You know what I mean? He's an excellent coach. You know, you don't hear nothing but great things about him from his players, from the people who employ him, from the FA, from everybody, all the initiatives he's working with outside the game as well. This man is fucking doing some great stuff.
Love it.
I'm so pleased with that. In this moment, you know what I mean, against Newcastle, his team played so well coached and so drilled that they beat them, and deservedly so. And that's why Darren Moore, I'm giving Darren Moore some flowers for that, because man's got to get some love and some flowers.
Absolutely.
Giving him a really good bunch of flowers.
It's like a subgenre of FA Cup game where the higher placed team, for example, rests a load of big guns. Gets himself into trouble, brings the big guns on, and still doesn't get out of trouble.
It's too late. The horse has bolted. They've already said it off in the opposing dressing room, Ryan, that, you know what, we don't need to play these guys against you lot. They've literally given them
it's permission the to go and beat them. Fuck around, find out. That's what it is.
No, you chat shit, get banged. That's what happens. You chat shit, get banged. And that's what they've done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like a, how can I say, it's like a not in so intimidating in your face way of saying, listen, we're going to come and play you, but you know we're not going to play these guys because we've got to rest them for bigger games. No game's bigger.
Mm.
No game's bigger than the next game, whoever you're playing against.
Oh, get on and, a tee.
Bro, no game's bigger than the next game.
That could be your any given Sunday speech.
Simply because you're literally telling that other you're telling the team in there, remember when the draw comes out, they're thinking, oh, we're going to play against him. We're going to play against him. We're going to play against him. Oh, brilliant, can't wait. Then the team comes out, and all of those guys are not playing. They're on the bench. Mm. You're fucking vexed. You're instantly vexed. And you're instantly saying, right, we'll fucking show you. That's what I would say. If I was a manager of a team of that stature playing against a bigger team and they've rested, I said, make them show you how good they are. This so-called second string who can't even get into the first team. What, they're better than you? Fucking show them. That's where the intensity's got to come from. That's where you've got to make them understand. You put your fucking team out against us, man. Because we're going to show you. And I'm so pleased that they Stevenage, I'm giving Stevenage flowers.
Yeah, yeah, let's do that too.
Oh,
Stevenage
nice.
Has got to get some as well. They weren't on the list, but they're getting flowers as well.
For sure. Just,
because yeah. to sustain and maintain around. And come back and then win the score the winner, Stevenage, boom, flowers.
Love it.
Gareth Bale, man.
Yeah.
Gareth Bale. And Gareth Bale, there was the time at Gareth Bale had at Tottenham when there was a spell at Tottenham, guys, where remember they didn't even want to play him because they went so many games when he played where they didn't win.
Yes, 20 something. Yeah.
Where Harry Redknapp, he will always deny, obviously because of what Gareth went on to do, always deny that he was maybe a week away from loaning him out to Forest or this one or that one, or I can't remember who it was. But he will never own that. And then Gareth Bale going on a career tear like you've never believed. And remember when you saw the, oh my God, he's in his final form.
Yes.
Inter Milan. Inter Milan. He was at left back and ripped the heart out of Maicon.
Man, never seen again.
A hat-trick. And clutch games, Moose.
Yes.
Big games, country and club, fucking hell. Because he was the one who was scoring goals in those finals when the goals needed to be scored.
Right. And fearless.
All due respect to Ronaldo. Ronaldo scored the goal, okay, that's the icing. But he scored the fucking goal.
Bale's one of the most unbothered players I've ever seen at the top level. It genuinely, I think Bale, there's times you think that man's probably more stressed out playing. Imagine he was invited as a guest to play Augusta. I think he'd be more stressed out on the back nine at Augusta because he respects that place so much and is maybe a bit afraid of it. Not that he doesn't respect elite football stages, but like, look at him. He scores the bicycle kick in the Champions League final against Liverpool and he comes off the pitch and immediately afterwards in the post-match interview, he's talking about not playing enough games. And not in an arrogant way, he's like, I don't get to play enough. And everyone else is like going delirious, Real have won, like, you know, another title. And Bale's just like, he's chill. I've never seen that. That's just the most level, next level, in terms of mentality. I think maybe only like a Di Maria, you know, like Angel Di Maria when he's fully fit, just plays flawless football in huge matches.
Yeah.
I think Bale is in that very small gap. And I think weirdly enough, I think because he played for Wales and because he was in and out of that Madrid team at certain points, I think Bale's going to end up as one of the most underrated legends, to be honest.
Easily.
Like 20 years from now, there'll be conversations. People are like, oh yeah, and Gareth Bale.
He was so disrespected.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know what? Like you say, Moose, about his temperament and how he is, right? He doesn't seem bothered, but deep down, obviously, he's bothered. You saw how he was sitting on the bench and stuff like that. They disrespected him so badly. And I'm so pleased that he has got the kind of personality where he can just like, yeah, so what? Have a look at those five fucking Champions League, the three leaguers, whatever it is. And you know what I've done for my country. The man's going to be up there. He's going to, like you say, Moose, his name's going to, when they do it, they're going to say, Gareth Bale as well, bro. Don't leave Gareth Bale out of that.
One of the greatest British footballers of all time.
Easily.
There ain't no doubt in my mind about that, right?
I mean, let's say British, I mean, European. Yeah.
I was going to say, can we give one more bunch of flowers out?
Because yes, yes.
This striker returned to training and looks like he may be set to make his debut finally for Borussia Dortmund.
Yes,
after
right.
Having treatment and surgery for testicular cancer, Sebastian Haller.
Wow!
Again, recovery.
Unbelievable recovery. And the thing is that when you're playing football, when you're dreaming about the greatness, you don't dream about misses, you don't dream about injuries, you don't dream about anything like that. And again, it comes down to the mental aspect of what you've got to go through as a footballer, especially as a top level footballer. No one's thinking of that kind of illness. As a footballer, so to be able to go through it, you know, to get it, go through it, and then come out the other side, fingers crossed, free. Is again, I can't praise these people enough for the mental strength. I can't say that, you know, me in that situation. How I can't even put myself in his shoes because I don't know how that happened. The worst injury I had was an ankle injury. This man's had an illness.
Mm.
You know, it's the same as you look at what happened to people who get illnesses, you know, like Frank Kirby. You're in no control of these kind of things. And so for Sebastian Haller to do that and go through it and, you know, done his speech, his missus was there, you know, it's the family and everything what people go through. So for him to come through, it's a triumph.
Mm. I'm just so happy for him, man.
So happy.
I can't imagine what that was like. I mean, he said something interesting. I think he said something like he's only actually had 17 days off. because he's been like working on keeping fit, and it's kind of unbelievable to do that I don't know, I've never experienced that, so
him to maintain focus like that is incredible. Can I say as well, shout out to him as well, because even while he was recovering, when he was like, you know, obviously going through it, I was like, there was one moment I thought this man's going to be fine. When he turns up at the Ballon d'Or ceremony, the man was kitted out. You see the roll neck and everything. I was like,
so
he looked crisp as hell.
Beautiful man. Like,
yeah, this man.
A beautiful man.
He's on his way back. He's on his way back.
Yeah, he knows. Yes.
Yeah, I'm just so happy. Yeah,
congratulations. I think they're very deserving recipients.
Yes. Yes.
Of flowers
it's
today, guys.
It's been a while since we've been out that many flowers.
No. Sometimes, you know, hey, sometimes you just have to give flowers.
For sure.
You gotta
sometimes
flowers,
you just have to give flowers.
Before we go, did you watch the Ant-Man and Wasp Quantumania trailer?
Oh my God. You know what? Kang, because
Kang
that
looks terrifying.
Honestly, can I just say with Kang, I can't wait to see it, but like Thanos, I first saw Thanos, because Thanos is so big, but he's so cool, his voice and brilliant fucking Josh Brolin, brilliant fucking casting. And he was as frightening as it gets because he's so big. I remember when you saw him beating up Hulk in Avengers.
Oh my God.
When you saw him beat up Hulk and then the guys went to rush Hulk and his minion guy kind of put his finger up to say, leave him.
Let him have his
fun. Oh my God. And then fucking Thanos just like dealt with the Hulk.
Terrifying.
And like, he's frightening. Thanos is frightening because of his stature and because of his calmness. But Kang's worse
because Kang you see, the worst thing, Kang is fighting Ant-Man, who's the weakest Avenger. And I've got to say this as well, Ian, you were saying earlier in the podcast about how, you know, Premier League teams that turn up and the non-league team sees the team sheet as weak. This is the opposite.
Where is this going?
So, Kang is never fielding a weak team sheet. Kang turned up and picked all the best players. You know, sometimes you get those big Premier League teams and they go and they pick the full strength team and they go play the non-league team and it's like 7-0 and it's a footballing lesson. They're going to get a lesson. Every superhero is going to get dragged for the next 3 years.
Have we beat you before?
Have we killed you before? Brilliant.
for a Marvel movie, I'm genuinely like, this is quite bleak. And I saw Sean Yu, formerly of The Ringer, he posted the screenshot of that bit at the end with Kang's got the two, like when he just shoots with the two things. And he's just like, Kang's about to go 82-0.
I can't wait for it.
No losses.
Because this is our first real.
This is where it's
encounter
about to, like, ramp
with,
up.
With Kang. Yeah. So Kang is coming to be the new Thanos, yeah?
Yes, yes.
No, he's gonna make Thanos look like...
He'll make Infinity War like a garden party.
Yeah, like
a garden party compared to this.
It's like at the end of Loki. He was just like, wait till you meet my variants.
Yes, exactly.
Wow. That's such a threatening.
You're wrong, man. And can we shout out to Jonathan Majors? Because this guy's a don.
Yeah.
But listen, guys, I'm time to leave. I've got to go practice golf, Bri. My swing. Oh. Thanks a lot. See you soon.
Absolutely.
See you soon, man. Much love.
Take care.
The best. I love you guys, man. I
love you too.
Okay, thank you very much, Ryan. Hun, thank you very much, Musa Kwanga. Really enjoyed that. Thanks very much for listening. We'll see you again next week. Arsenal now, because obviously we're the winningest club in the FA Cup. We're into the next round, but we've got Man City. I'm not afraid of that. I've kind of stuck on it in my head, but I'm not afraid of it. But like, listen, we speak again next week, man. God bless everybody. Stay safe.